Hi everyone, this is John Campbell bringing a warm welcome to all our listeners for Miracle Hour on bbsradio.com. This is the program where we get to talk about the many miracles that I have encountered and others have encountered on their journeys of awakening. And we get to listen to some really amazing people who I have encountered on the way. And this evening's guests are really very special to me because when I kind of woke up in 97, I started to have a look at the education system that I had come from and that so many people are still in, and a series of events, synchronistic events, which is what seems to happen all the time, led me to a workshop where I met an American lady who told me about an amazing school in India where she saw all these kids who wanted to get into the school during the school break. They didn't want school to end, and they used to hide the school bell every day when the so that they couldn't ring the bell to end the school. And this guy inspired me so much that I wanted to go and investigate. So I flew out and visited the school in Texas, the Sri Atmananda Memorial School in Austin, Texas, and I was completely just blown away by these kids. I'd never witnessed self-esteem in young people. They were happy, they were confident, they spoke to me as an equal, which is what I always see everyone as. And that inspired me then to go on and visit the mother school in India where this all started. And eventually that led to a number of people going out and training in the approach. And it truly is a remarkable way of preparing children for adulthood. You know, when I look at what's happening around the world today, I see many fantastic, amazing things, and people are changing and just finding there's a better way to prepare kids, and there's a lot of great educational programs around. And what made me start to really think about the need for another one, different one, was because all the kids I used to speak to, you know, I used to ask them if they were excited at the thought of going to school every day, and very few of them sort of gave me that feeling that they were excited. In fact, they just gave me the opposite. So there must be something that's not happening right. So we're going to introduce today a young woman called Lizzie Hornby, who qualified over here in England and then went out to India and trained for a year. She's going to talk to you, and also a family, Kestrel and Mandy. They live down in the west country of England, and they've made a decision to take their kids out of the traditional school system and have them educated in this approach. So you're going to hear what they've got to say about it, and anybody that wants to phone in, the numbers are there on the station, on the website. Please feel free to phone in with your questions or ideas. So first of all, let me welcome Lizzie. Lizzie, how are you doing there?
Good evening, John. How are you?
Great, thanks very much. Great to hear, have you on the program tonight. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to hear about this and what was your process?
How I came to hear about the school in India?
Yeah, so just to say a little bit about that and your training, etc.
Well, I heard about the school in India from you, John, and then I went on the website and learned all about the approach, and I really decided this is the way forward for my training, my becoming a teacher. I went to India just after I graduated and spent 10 months training in the approach, and I really learned that this is the way forward for all the new children and just for children in general that don't.
And what was the thing, Lizzie, that when you went down to India, what was the first thing that struck you about the children at the school?
Well, they're very, very confident and happy, and learning just happens so fluidly, part of everyday fun. All the teachers are there with the children, playing in the playground, and everything is so organic in that way. I learned from the very first day to interact with the children on their level and to their world, their playing, and that's how you teach them, by having that relationship with them.
And did you find that, I think the thing that a lot of people find kind of very strange and quite challenging, people that have only known the traditional system, is this concept of allowing the child to kind of lead the learning that they want to go into, and actually trusting that the child knows what they want to learn and when they want to learn. Can you say a little bit about how that works?
Yes, it's really true. If the parents can trust in the children's innate wisdom and enthusiasm for learning, and I noticed here homeschooling children that they lead you in the way that they have ideas every single day, new things to do, even if it's not something you've planned for them to do that day. If you can be fluid with them and just go with the flow, and it's still very educational, everything has you can make anything educational for the child if you follow their interest. And things may happen at different times, especially different to government schools. They might learn to read later or sooner. And if you can relax and know that everything will come together in the end, especially when they graduate at 16 or 18, then you'll have a very happy educational life with your children.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that struck me, really, was having been to two of their graduation days, was to see the confidence in those 18-year-olds at the end of... Because many people, you know, question the wisdom of letting children free to express themselves to that extent. But I think the proof is on those graduation days. And the thing I noticed, I don't know if you saw it, was the absence of kind of anger or, you know, any type of stuff like that. They just don't seem to have it, you know, because they've been allowed that.
I did notice that, especially in the high school altogether. I think that they've dealt with issues that may have come out normally in sort of their teenage years when they were at primary school. They've learned that they've had the positive influence from all their adults, that sort of the adults around them have given them such confidence in themselves that they don't have the kind of anger towards their parents or their teachers or their peers in the high school years. And when they come to graduate, they just blossom, they're so confident, and they have these skills that they can take into any job. And the employees see it. They see they can multitask and just adapt and lead, and they have, a creativity that's never been hindered, or it's amazing.
Yeah, and they also, what struck me is that they seem to be very caring young adults. They seem to really care about each other, and they're there to support and help each other.
It's true. They know they're not forced to share when they're very young until they're ready, and that way, when they do come to share, it's their own decision, and it means that they'll always be free with their belongings, because it's come to them from their own, it hasn't been forced to. And when it is forced too early, you find that as adults they hang on to things a lot longer or find it difficult to let go of anything really, property, relationships, material things.
That sharing thing is a fascinating concept, and I remember when you explained it to me for the first time, when I hear it explained as you explain it, it makes such common sense. So much of this stuff is common sense. But what I find is that very often what happens is the parents or teachers, they go into their embarrassment as to what other people may think of them as teachers or parents. Huh? So explain what happens with that sharing, where children are not forced to share. Just say a little bit more, could you, about what happens there?
Well, often what the children wants to share is, or doesn't want to share is their teacher, especially in this school in India. And the teacher in a situation like that, if he has a child that wants to do one thing and a child that wants to do a different thing, and they both want you right now, is to to never put them down or make it seem like you don't want to play with them, we don't want to do this with them, and you find another teacher or another game or include them in what you're doing right now, try to make everything inclusive. And so they never think, oh, that teacher doesn't want to play with me because of me. And that goes for everything. The confidence that they get from their teachers is because they know they're not going to be put down and or told, refused things because of who they are. They're always valued unconditionally, exactly who they are, whatever it is, whatever their behavior is. And that means that they're positive. The positive input that they get about themselves leads to a positive self-image when they're older, especially, you know, when they're at high school and when they leave, they have that. Because if it was always negative when they were younger, if they always had a negative response from adults and from their teachers, or even if it's just saying, no, 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 go away, or I can't do that with you now, or they often internalize this. They decide, okay, that's because of me, not because the adult hasn't got time to do it right now. They don't see that. They think it's because of them. And if it's done long enough and enough times, then it starts to internalize this negative self-image. And the reason this school produces so many happy adults is because of that. They have their own self-image is very positive.
Right. And would you say that this concept, there's nothing expected back in return, is it? It's like the traditional system is you know, that children have always got a feeling that they've got to give something back in order to be valued. And that's never felt right to me. This kind of reward and punishment system, it doesn't work.
It doesn't at all. I felt in the regular systems in the UK, anyway, are so driven by just a power struggle between teachers and children. It's mad to see that the teachers are on a constant warpath against the children, in a way, especially in secondary schools.
Yeah.
To get the work out of them and just to establish their authority over them. And in that way, it just creates a big sort of negative ball of chaos, actually.
And I think it's growing, isn't it? I mean, all over the world, as you know, I've just come back from Canada, you know, and listening to young people over there as well. They are not getting nurtured. They're not getting what they need. This is what's...
They're not getting it academically either, which is what's being pushed by the government is results. Always results and tests, and from, you know, 6 years old they're tested in 9 and 10, and just, but then that way is not working either. They're not leaving, there's a lot of children leaving schools without a full rounded education at all. So it's going to come to a point where they realise there's something missing, and it's not an academic thing. It's totally, you know, emotional and personal part of the education, which will help fix the academic. That will come naturally if you can nurture the whole child.
And did you find, with the children at the school, did you find it was necessary to spend some real time with the parents as well, explaining? Because, I mean, you've got to have the parents on board supporting this system, and we're going to talk to Nandi and Tesla very shortly.
Absolutely. Do you mean the school in India?
Yeah.
With the parents?
Yeah.
Yes, they have.
A lot of time was spent with them, sort of introducing them to the concept?
Yes, I found that you can't really do it without. I think that the parents are aware of the approach, and they know what their children are going into, and they try to use it at home. I think sometimes they will want to help with the academic side of things, but really, if they can leave it to the school and just practice the unconditional love and support at home, then the best of both worlds will come.
Yeah.
Children,
and from what I remember, there's no, they're not forced to do homework or exams
no.
or that kind of stuff. It all
no.
comes from them, doesn't it?
It does, and they ask for it when they're ready, and they're always very enthusiastic about their learning. And but nothing is forced. They're never forced to do anything.
And did you find that because you came home and you taught for a short while in a traditional national system state school over here?
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about what you found there with regarding. You know, there were some children that the other teachers were complaining were almost unmanageable.
Yeah, I think the children are most proud of that when they find they've been told that they're unteachable or they're, you know, that I think that there's a very strange dynamic going on, and it's definitely one that's for the children sort of rebelling. And I've heard very negative, very, very negative things coming from the teachers about students, and it's a difficult place to go into and try and work with what I learned previously in India, that it can be done. And after a while, the children recognised that it was sort of a more free kind of atmosphere in my classroom, and they ended up sharing their personal lives and with me and. Sorry. And they did their work. You know, they did the work that was required of them. And this wasn't understood by the other teachers who spend their lives, you know, battling to get work out of them, 24 hours, just trying to get coursework and exam and revision and everything done. And that's just the sole focus. And some of them, you know, I've heard they don't believe is worth that effort. And it's definitely a power struggle, as I said before.
Yeah. So this sounds like this is a constant problem, and we're hearing more and more people and parents are taking their children out of the traditional school system because it's not working. And I think the other thing that I've noticed, there is a different consciousness of child coming into the world today. It's almost like they have greater awareness, they understand who they really are, whereas, you know, our system traditionally is valued them according to what they give back, according to what they achieve in the academic field, whereas it's always been kind of obvious to me that you've got to value them for who they are, not what they do. And when they keep feel that, I think they blossom. And I think that's what this system, you know, this KPM approach encourages all the time.
It does. And I think that's perfect. It's perfect, especially in homeschooling. And homeschooling with this approach is amazing for the new children. And because they're not coping in normal schools, and we don't want to, you know, squash any of this creativity and confidence that they already have when they're born, that they know what they want to do in their life, and often don't fit with any regular, you know, a lot of them diagnose ADHD children. There's a huge influx in that. And
yeah.
I noticed with my youngest group in the secondary school here, the year sevens, that was a very large, too many for one class, I'd say, because they would... require a lot of your special attention, because they have a different way of learning, and they would very, very much blossom in this kind of approach. And,
yeah. And also, I understand this, you know, a lot of them, because these kids have got so much energy, they've got
yeah.
so much connection, and it's been dampened down, and even in some many cases now they're being drugged with Ritalin.
Medicated, yeah, that's the worst thing for it.
Yeah, yeah. Because the other thing. In the school down there, they're totally they're free to get that energy out. There's a lot of time spent in the playground, which also learning is happening as well, isn't it?
In the playground?
In the playground,
sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They also notice that they can tell when something's not honest in adults and other children. They just see straight away when something's not right. And I think they find that in regular schools, that one of the little boys is telling me how he can see in someone's eyes when they're not telling him the truth, and it makes him very frustrated, and thinks something about the blinking and the ways that I look. And he was very, very, very specific about telling me about this, which I felt was very nice of him to do that. And it was explained to me what he had, but it was just plain sort of indigo child to me. Yeah, he was very, and he told me that he could look into my eyes and he knew he could tell me something, but he was very frustrated with being in this school. So I would have loved to be able to be something for him to go to here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And this is the thing, these kids, they have like a radar on them. They know
exactly
when they're being conned, and they won't take it. And I love it.
No.
I love these guys, you know, because this is where our future lies, you know. These people,
yeah,
when they get up into positions, they're not going to accept corrupt practices, and they're so in tune with the way things, you know, are supposed to be. And they're very loving. That's what I found. They're very, very loving and open.
Yeah. Yes, they are. They teach us a lot.
So at the moment, then you're at the moment now. I understand tutoring Kestrel and Nandi's great children. Kestrel and Nandi, are you there with us at the moment?
They're right here. I'm just going to put it back on.
Yeah. So, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, what first got you thinking about offering your kids a different approach? Would you like to tell our listeners something about that?
Hi, John. You have to start at the beginning of the question because we had the phone not on loudspeaker. So now, can you say the beginning bit again, please?
Yeah, not a great to hear your voice, by the way, and I hope you've recovered from your trip to India. I heard you
had
Jelly Belly or something.
Had a bit of a viral fever. Quite good fun that was.
So when did you actually arrive back, Kestrel?
This morning.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, thank you so much for giving up your time and coming on there.
That's fine, John.
What started you thinking about looking at a different approach? Tell us a little bit about that, will you?
Well, it was you, Kez, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, it was meeting you, John, in Scotland. We were at A Course in Miracles workshop of Gary Renard's in... where was it again?
Findhorn
in Scotland, as I'm sure you remember. And we got talking about schooling, didn't we? And education and stuff. And it started a whole ball rolling at such a hurtling speed.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that very well. And that was so synchronistic because we were at breakfast Penny was there with myself, and Penny, of course, had gone out and trained, had gone through some of the training in India at the school. And I think you were mentioning about the challenges and the struggles that mainly, I think, Louis at the time, your son Louis, was experiencing. And Penny and I looked at each other and thought, oh, and we happened to have the DVD of the school. And we shared that with you, and then you went home and spoke to Nandi, and she was supportive. But what I was really also interested in, what was happening with Louis, Nandi, at school? What were you seeing there in the traditional system?
I was just seeing an incredibly bright child who had a whole capacity for learning, not being satisfied in any way, and also being fearful of telling the teachers what he thought and what he wanted to do. So just basically being held back and not being able to grow in a healthy way at all. And the same for my younger son. He was going into school and he was completely detaching and getting sent home these dreadful books that I was supposed to read with him every day, but they were the most uninspiring, boring things I've ever seen. But as a mother, to think of homeschooling without any help was always incredibly, you know, difficult because you've got so much else to do. So it was a big thing to try and think about, but we've done it now anyway. We've got them at home.
That's what, I mean, I just want to tell our listeners, I have such admiration and I want to acknowledge you both and for what you did there. You know, these guys, well, the first thing that was amazing was really, I mean, you were there, you were not at the workshop in Findhorn because you were at home there looking after kids, and so it was really Kestrel that saw the thing, and I remember Penny and I thinking, oh, well, if you go back home, if Kestrel goes back home, you know, you might think, you know, he's lost the plot. And then, of course, we found exactly the opposite, and your instant, you know, request for us to come down and show you the DVD and talk about it, and also the DVD of the Indigo Evolution, I think was very awe-inspiring. That's an amazing documentary because it does highlight that, you know, we've got to accept that these kids are not, they have a wisdom so far beyond, you know, many of the children in the past, and they need to be nurtured. But the way you just went for it, I think, was amazing. And you just jumped on a plane, both of you went out there. And tell us about what you found when you got out there to India at the school.
Well, just incredibly happy children and amazing teachers. We watched them all come off the bus, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And they came smiling and laughing into the school. And the teachers all incredibly relaxed, just a feeling of real kind of harmony between the teacher and the child, and a great respect for the child, which is what used to frustrate me and Kestrel, was that we felt our children weren't being respected, you know, being called stupid or told they can't do something, or, you know, not even bothering to inspire them. And the school in India just seemed to us like such a enlightened way of teaching children, because, you know, that you need to respect them because they've got so many things that, if lost, are lost to all of us, you know, and as a planet too in this day and age. I really think we need to think of a different way of treating our children in order to save the human race. I know that sounds a bit melodramatic, but I really think it's true.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, when I came down and stayed with you, I mean, that was the most wondrous time. It was fantastic to meet your kids. You know, I still remember, you know, we all sat down there on the sofa and watched that big soccer match that night, and they were so open and, you know, forthcoming. And I just, you know, I knew that this was something that they'd really benefit from. And when you came back then from India, what are you actually planning to do now as a family?
Well, as soon as I, Kest came back a bit later, but as soon as I came back, I told them that tomorrow is your last day of school, which they were both first delighted about, and they had the weekend, and then Tuesday, which was today, was their first day of being taught by Lizzie. Sorry, just trying to think what day Tuesday is. Was being taught by Lizzie at home, and we're sitting in the classroom at the moment, and it's just already seems like such a place of learning. There's huge life-size drawings of skeletons, and they've done all the, you know, the organs inside, and they just seem, they're so happy, you know, their faces are bright, and they're doing what they want, you know, with the help of Lizzie. And it's great for me. I couldn't have done it on my own. I just can't, because I don't have the energy and the time, because I've got another small one. You know, what with all the housework and cooking, it's just impossible. So it's just brilliant. And we're deciding to go out to India and give it a go, put them in the school in November, and, you know, see how it goes there. But we're also going to hopefully help you guys start up a school here.
Well, that's the part which really everything seems to have fitted together, because I totally understand, you know, A, you're not having the energy or the belief that you can do, you know, the homeschooling yourself. And I want to really say to any of our listeners who are in a similar situation, that's perfectly okay, because the Angel Project, which is our project that wants to start these homeschooling houses, we're calling them, totally understands that. So it's going to be homeschooling houses with complete freedom and invitation for parents to have as much or as little involvement in the day-to-day, you know, teaching of their children as they wish. So there's going to be no, you know, feelings of disgrace if you're too busy, you're doing something else. Because the most important thing is that the kids are being valued unconditionally, whoever is there. You know, that's what the whole thing centers around. And the other big thing that I want to get to the listeners' awareness is that if you are struggling and you don't think your kids are getting what they need at school, it's really important, and I can only speak for the UK here, that it is not a law. You do not have to send your children to school. You know, when I was lecturing and talking about education around the country, the number of people that were just astonished to learn that that was not a requirement. They just didn't understand that. They thought, oh, if they didn't send the kids to school, they'd get fined, etc. But it's not. You're only required to provide an education with them. And there's an amazing cooperative called Education Otherwise, which there's a website for it where, you know, people can subscribe to belonging to that. Because more and more parents are realizing that there is a better way, there must be a better way, and that they are taking their children out. So it's really important to get that across.
I think that is very important for mums to hear. And I think what you'll find is once you start setting up these houses, the mothers will come in and they'll think of things that they can do with a group of children, and they'll know that they're coming in a certain day for a certain amount of hours. So they'll also spend better time with their children and know actually what they're doing at school, because what I found with my school, with my children, is that you never really knew, because they were so uninterested. They never really knew themselves what they were doing when they came home, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. And also to have the freedom, for example, you know, if you want to take the kids off for a visit to, I don't know, wherever, a historical site or something for a day out of the school, you're free to do so. I mean, you know, we have to start opening up and becoming more free as a society. I think it's happening, but it seems to be that the more people want to break free, the more the authorities want to control. But I just see it all having a very happy ending in the end, because in the end you cannot squash the human spirit. And these young guys have really got connected to their spirit. That's what I've seen.
Yeah, we've got to stop thinking that we have to institutionalize them, you know, in a way, you know, like the masses. Let's institutionalize the masses, which is what in this country is happening even more. You know, they're trying to keep children in school from 8:30 till 6 now, and there's after-school clubs, so you have breakfast, lunch and supper so that they can send mums out to work. And I think that is really bad news, all that kind of stuff. So this is the opposite, and it would be really good if it started becoming more of a normal way of treating children, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And Kestrel, can I ask you, were you a bit sceptical when you first heard it? Was it a shock to you? Because I know you shared with me your own schooling was a very strict, rigid system, wasn't it?
Yes. I did have some slight reservations. I thought it was sort of, you know, possibly too much, too free, and you know, I've been beaten every week at school, and goodness knows what. And I kind of, you know, was brought up in very disciplined kind of schools, and thought that there was some sense to all that, but actually now, as time's gone on, I've realised that probably there's no sense to it at all, and it's a pretty unenlightened sort of approach. But I did have some reservations, but they've gone now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so, and when you were down there, did you get time to spend with the high school students as well as the younger ones?
Did we get time to do what?
to visit the high school down in India as well as the you know, the primary?
Yeah, we got to see it. We got to see it, and we looked around both campuses, and they were brilliant. I mean, my keenest impression of all the schools was the happiness that all the kids have. There's just such a happy kind of feeling about it.
Yeah. I mean, I totally relate to that. I remember when I went down there, I didn't have any need to understand the intricacies of the approach, because I know it doesn't just happen. There's, you know, Lizzie's done the training and there's method to every single thing they do, and it's brilliant. But I didn't even need to get into that, because all I saw was the faces of the children. And as soon as I saw those faces of those children, I said, this has got to be a way. This has got to be something that's seriously looked at. Because I don't see it over
here. Yeah, quite.
The traditional system. You know, it's an amazing concept. And when do you think that you'll be going over there with the family?
Well, we're planning to go in November and sort of start living in India. You know, it's all quite a big move for us. But the plan is to go there in November and then kind of get into the March applications, hopefully get kind of our kids, you know, enrolled. And they said that, you know, that probably will happen sort of thing, hopefully. And then come May, that'll be the beginning of their school year. And they'll start schooling then.
That's
God willing.
and tell me, how was it when you were, both of you, I'm talking, how was it when you took the guys out of the school and told them they'd be, you know, working with Lizzie?
Oh, they've loved it. I mean, you've never seen such interest and enthusiasm. I mean, I'm sitting in our kind of sitting room with all these kind of pictures of the human body, you know, full size, full length, and Rome, and all the intestines and bones and goodness knows what written all up, and Roman tortoise drawings by Jesse, and sharks, and the clocks and the alphabet and everything, and they're just really, you know, they've got no worries about asking Lizzie what they don't know, what they've always wanted to ask, and felt worried to ask in the school, because the teachers sort of say, oh, don't, you know, it's, you know, Lily was sort of worried about being called, you know, stupid or whatever, so it just, you know, for not knowing his alphabet or the way the months are, you know, which order the months go and things, silly little things like that. But if you can't ask at school, then what's in school's not really a very sort of a place, is it?
and I think the other thing that hit me so hard, you know, when I went down there was the ability that the teachers have to allow the children to develop at their own speed. So there's absolutely no pressure put on them to learn to read and write. There's no time they have to. And I've never understood that. You know, how can an organization, so an institution like a government or an education authority, suddenly blanket right across the whole of society, say that by the time kids are 6 years of age, they have to reach a standard? I mean, who to me, it's so obviously, you know, not correct.
I mean,
down there with children learning to read and write quite late and then catching up with their peers without a problem because there's been no pressure.
Yeah, I mean, there were children apparently who were not able to read for ages until they were sort of, I don't know, maybe even 12 years old, one of them, and then he had a really particular interest, I can't remember what it was, dinosaurs, and he wanted to do a project on dinosaurs, and he realized that he'd have to learn to read and write for that, and he did it in a matter of sort of weeks or months, and due to his interest, drawing him and, you know, making him learn.
Yeah. And I believe you're going to have quite a group of other parents coming together for us to come down and talk to them very shortly with a view to them doing a similar thing, yeah?
Yes. Say that again, so Nandy, I'll put you on loudspeaker again. One sec.
Yeah. I think you've generated some interest. You seem to be a prime mover down in that area of the world, that you've generated some interest in some other families who are genuinely interested in seeing the approach with a view to maybe, you know, having their children educated at one of these homeschooling houses. Is that right, Nandy?
Yes, very much. I think it is definitely a good part of the world. There's a lot of very frustrated parents wishing for something else but feeling too unsupported, you know, and thinking that they can't cope because they've got smaller children or, you know, they're very tired. They can't cope. Mm. It's too daunting to have it, to have all the children at home, us having to be their educators. So if they had something else to go to that they'd all also help with, but as a group, it would be absolutely brilliant. And I know a good few families already who we can speak to and who are very interested.
Well, that's fantastic. And you know, there's an old saying, from little acorns, great oak trees grow. And I think this is what we're seeing here. So we're going to be really excited to come down and visit with them. And
yeah,
we truly believe this is the start. This is the start, and it will grow from here, because once there's one going, and it is unique, because as you're aware, we're looking to get funding from private companies, and we've got a company very, very keen to do this. It's an oil company, and they've followed this project with me. They've been tremendously supportive, and I think that we're going to see a lot more of this type of funding coming in, because, you know, I think we've got to keep away from having to go to government for funding, because the minute you go to government, then they're going to start sticking their requirements on. And this way, it's a totally different approach.
Yes, you don't want any kind of fire system getting involved, because that will ruin it. They'll start putting, you know, kind of saying children have got to know this by a certain age and that kind of thing. That kind of thing that would ruin it.
Yeah, and what do you have in the way down there? Are there? Because it's quite an alternative area, isn't it? There are different schools. Do you have any Montessori down there?
No.
There's not a Montessori.
Hardly any.
That's interesting, because, as you know, I've just come back from having a wonderful 2 weeks in Canada with my wife over there. Mary and I, we're passionate about this approach, and we met a couple who have, interestingly, five children who are all at Montessori, and even they were saying that, you know, they were looking for a different approach as well, because they found that it was still a bit too controlled, you know. So there is a need for that as well.
But we don't even have Montessori. I think England is really lacking in this, especially because they're so kind of hung up on their education system being the best one in the whole world. Mm. And so they're not willing to try and change it, even though it so obviously isn't working for so many children, you know.
Yeah. The only options are private alternative schools, which are...
And they are incredibly expensive, exactly, yeah.
And this kind of approach has got to be available to everyone, you know. And I think that's the other thing, that there has to be... The world is coming to the understanding that we're all here together to help each other, and I think that these education approaches need to be available to all types of different people. As that school is in India, of course, you've got people coming from all different walks of life, haven't you?
Absolutely, yes, and it definitely does, and that's the way it should be, because that's what life is like, you know. You don't want to stuck in a school where everyone's paying huge amounts of money, so you never meet anyone who's not from a different kind of background. I think that's all, you know, really not good too, in a way, for children. You need to meet everyone, you know, all mixed
up. Lizzie, bringing you in again, when the young children at the school, they get up to their sort of 17, their school leaving age, what kind of situations do they get into with regarding further education? Because I understand... There's one or two over here at Cambridge or Oxford at the moment. I think so.
I know that every 100% of the leavers in the Indian school have gone to university so far. And
that's
been going 20 years now.
Percentage.
Yeah, 100%. And they've gone on to a huge range of different jobs, and they're really making a difference in whatever they've gone into. It's been, I've heard of our students in interviews that have got the job over other young adults who have more qualifications because of their skills, the life skills they're bringing to it. And often in India, they have a test you have to take in the interview. And so, yes, these children, if they didn't do as well, they're still getting the jobs because of what they have to offer.
Yeah. Because they're very self-responsible. And that's the other thing that's encouraged at a young age there in the school, isn't it?
Absolutely. They learn that they take responsibility for their day from age four, really. They make the decisions. They learn how to think for themselves and decide, make decisions about their own learning. And it really works. It carries through really well into their older life.
And also they help each other, don't they? There's not the kind of age discrimination.
There's no age barrier. Nearly no age barriers. They go to different campuses, but they still seem to mix an awful lot, even with older kids come down to visit. And but in the lower primary, it's so free. There aren't the class age groups.
Yeah.
There's no classrooms as such. It's divided between subjects. So each room has a subject, and most of the learning, because it's in India, is outside, and everything's happening all at once. And you go to the room, or you go to the teacher with this activity because you want to learn about that subject. And there's a whole mix of 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, doesn't matter. They all help each other.
And I think the other thing that I remember is that the KPN Institute actually encouraged an independent researcher to come in. I think Dr. Gary Borish was his name, I think.
Gary Borish.
He spent some time in India and some time in a school in Texas, in Austin. And what was the name of the book he wrote?
Vital Impressions. His research was very, very interesting because he came from knowing nothing about the school and maybe even being a bit skeptical, he completely started from scratch. And he became he had such respect for it at the end. He decided his results are very, very thorough, and he came to the conclusion that it mixes all the alternative approaches that are in the world at the moment. It really brings them all together and adds something else to it. So there's the holistic approach and the Montessori, the Waldorf Steiner, everything. He noticed all of those approaches being used in the school. And also just the one added extra bit that he hasn't found in any other educational approaches is the unconditional trust between the teacher and the child. That relationship is the first and foremost thing that every teacher learns and every child experiences at the school. And that's what really makes a difference in the child's education and their life.
Yeah, I mean, and the other big thing I wanted to mention as well was the absence of any kind of competition. And you know, this can be a real struggle for people that have only known the competitive type of education. And, you know, I've had some real, real interesting discussions with teachers and parents to say, you know, they said, oh, no, competition is good and it's good. But to me, it's so obvious as well that it's against the human spirit, you know. And it's wonderful that here we have a school system where there is no competition at all encouraged. The children are not encouraged to compete. Yet they do well in sports, they enjoy their sports.
They enjoy it whether they win or lose because someone wins, and they just all share it, and it's the actual playing of the game that they enjoy. There isn't this I have to be better than the others, or it's just not that's not there, and it's encouraged that just like sort of acceptance of everybody and everyone's skills, no matter their ability, so that It includes all the children, whatever they might have disability or anything. It's all included. Everyone's included.
Yeah. And I think that's something which they could really teach the world, you know.
An
amazing book. I don't know whether you read the book while you were out there called No Contest by Alfie Kohn, The Case Against Competition. And if anybody is struggling with the concept that competition is not healthy, I encourage them to read that book. It's called No Contest by Alfie Kohn, and it's The Case Against Competition, and it's full of very good, solid research. And I think that this school approach shows this to be very true, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So the KPM approach is the name of the approach. For those of you who'd like to visit the website, it's www.kpmapproach.org, where you can learn more about the approach, and you can learn about our project at theangelproject.org, and we'll keep you posted as to the progress. And it's been amazing having you all on the program this evening. I acknowledge you all. It's amazing work you're doing. Lizzie, a tremendous. You're a beacon. You're a beacon carrier there. The way you went back into that school and actually turned around so many students who the other teachers had virtually kind of given up on mentally. You know, it's amazing, and I think it's a great credit to you that you've got the courage to do that. And to you,
well, thank you very much
for taking your kids out and having faith and trust in this approach. I acknowledge you all.
Thank you, John. Kez has gone to bed.
Sorry?
He's still a bit ill, so Kez isn't here at the moment. He said goodbye. Good night, yeah.
I can imagine. And I look forward very much to coming down again sometime next week to see the other families.
Yes, soon. We'll sort it out. We've got to
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
And passing this word. So anybody who would like to know more about that, please feel free to go to the website, and the email addresses are there as well. There is definitely a need. There's a need for change. There's change afoot. And these kids, these new kids, they're going to demand it. They really know what life is about. They know, they seem to be really understanding of the concept that love is more powerful than fear. And they're going to do things a different way. So thank you once again for coming in, and have a lovely evening.
Thank you, and
we will.
And I look forward to seeing you next week.
Yeah, good, John. Okay, bye.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay, so I'll say once again, if you'd like to know more about this approach to children, it's called the KPM approach to children. And you can visit the website at www.kpmapproach.org. And while I'm just closing today's program, I want to thank my beautiful wife out in Canada for a wonderful 2 weeks, and all the fabulous people that we met while we were out there. Thank you to Sue and Virginia and their families, and Penny out there, and Brian and Cindy, for getting everything going, because there's an amazing movement there who are very much in tune with this teaching approach, and our purpose is to get one of these homeschooling houses up there and running as soon as possible as well. But thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful evening. Go well, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you. Bye-bye now.